Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast, a podcast about expanding your creative capacity. Each week, we interview inspiring creatives to help you grow your freelance career. All right, let's get into the episode. Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Andrea Mejia Madriz, and I'm a part of the Artist Marketing and Partnerships team here at Closer and Closer. And as always, I have my beautiful, wonderful co-host with me here today, Dave Arcade.
Thanks, Andrea. I am an artist on the Closer and Closer roster, but enough about me because it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest. She is a designer and artist currently based in Bristol, UK. Her delicate paper sculptures, that's right, paper, are a display of vibrant colors, textures, and compositions that highlight beauty and fragility with a high attention to detail. Diana's work has been, has been exhibited worldwide. She has created work for Disney, Vogue, Harper, Collins, New York, Greenpeace, Singapore, the Singapore Children's Museum, and more. Please welcome the ultra-talented Colombian-born Diana Beltran Herrera. Welcome, Diana.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for having me here.
Of course. We're so excited to have you. I want to let you know that when I was putting your portfolio together on the CNC website, every like 10 pieces, I would just go into my roommate's room and be like, oh my God, look at this. Do you know this is paper? And she would just, you know, she's not like a nerd like me. So she would be like, oh, that's really cool. Like, awesome. But I was like, how are you not freaking out about this?
Yeah. What did you do with my website when you're putting it together with your roommates? Like what kind of stuff did you do?
I said, look at this nerd over here. Just kidding. But I am a big fan of your work, Diana. So I'm excited to kind of talk to you more. You're also one of the newer artists on the roster. Right.
Yeah, that's a good way to kick things in, yeah. I guess. And, you know, have that conversation about all things in here.
Exactly. Yeah. So just to dive right in, first things first, how did you get into creating paper sculptures? It sounds like a very specific interest to me, and I'm really interested to see like how you kind of discovered that you were interested in it and good at it.
Well, I think just, you know, paper sculpture just came quite a long, you know, way ahead. But I think the beginning is I was interested in making things since I was very little. So I will always, my mom was really good at making things for the house, and I will always sit, you know, beside her just taking her scraps and just trying to figure out what to do with the things she had left. And I was just really, you know, curious and good at making my own things. I like making my own things. So when I went to choosing career, I chose to study industrial design, which it was about making things. And design is about objects, you know, it's about physical things that need to be practical and usable and communicate things. So that's where the whole thing of, you know, volumes and things appear more in my life. And then with time, it evolved into, a sculpture as it is, because it's not like a product that you could use. Mm-hmm. So it sits as an object that, you know, has a volumetric presence in space. And then paper. Why paper, I guess, is the question. Because I mean, it's been there always, and I think this is something interesting, is paper has been there for all of us since we're very little, because it's the first medium we use when we create a drawing. So it's not alien, and it's not that it just happened out of the blue to me. It's just that I recognize it. It's just that I saw it, and I saw that it was there along the way all the time. And when I was at school, I did collages for my friends. So that was, you know, the first approach. It would be like, paper doodles. I used to do like cards for like the boyfriends and things like that. And then when I was at uni, paper was the main thing because it's what I used to make models. But I didn't did a lot of models with paper at uni. So I wish that I knew it more. It's just that I get to know it when I graduated, because I didn't have a job and I didn't have anything to do in my life, and I wanted to do lots of things, and I didn't want to invest any money. Yeah. So then I look into some covers in my house and I found lots of cards, and I thought, I'm just going to give it a go because I have plenty of it. I had magazines, I had like a whole bunch of paper, and no one cared about it. It was just there going in the bin. Yeah. And so I thought, that's it. And I just start playing. And what I like about paper is that I didn't care about it at all. So, you know, if it got damaged, then it will just end up in the bin. But yeah, at least I tried doing something, you know, I tried rescuing and tried creating something. And the thing, I just found it was really easy. It was very simple. I didn't need a lot of tech to do anything. It was just me, scissors, ripping, glue, folding it. It was the most easy thing for me. So I just got really comfortable with it because it was very easy and accessible. And then I joined paper with my passion for objects, and then that's how I make paper sculptures.
I love that. Yeah, I think, go for it, Dave.
Oh, I was gonna say, will you say drawing one more time?
Me?
Yes.
Drawing.
You said it quickly. Yeah, there's you just have a fantastic accent, and scissors and drawing really stood out to me.
I love that. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, I am. I don't speak English at my first, so I always have, you know, my husband.
You speak fantastic English. Are you kidding me?
Thank you. Because my husband had a go at mountains, because I used to say mountains, and he would laugh at me, and I learned to say mountains. So, I try. I mean, you get it, which is good.
That's exactly what my mom says every time I, like, make fun of her for saying a word wrong. She's like, but you knew what I meant, so who cares? And I'm like,
where's your mom from again, Andrea?
Costa Rica.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she has. It's, sorry. It's not like, we're not trying to make fun. It's like we love the accent. And it's so weird because Americans are terrible at this. We're like, will you please say this word again? Like, I was telling a client on the phone yesterday who's from the UK is like, I just really like your voice. It's very soothing. And he's like, oh, it was a man too. And he was like, oh, thanks, man.
I mean, one of the things about living in the UK is that I love how people talk. I feel is, you know, I don't know. I play with my friends when I was in Colombia learning to, you know, speak English, and we try to, you know, copy accents.
Yeah.
which it didn't result in anything. But yeah, I mean, my husband is really particular about me pronouncing things well. So he's really picky on words. And it's not just him, it's, you know, I mean, I have to say it's, I mean, I think people in the UK are very proud about English.
Yeah.
So whenever he just gets funny, I just start speaking in Spanish. And I say, you know, that's it.
You're like, I'm not talking to you anymore.
Yeah.
By the way. That's so funny. But yeah, I just wanted to say, like, I really appreciate the ethos behind, like, choosing paper. I think that your reasoning for that is so interesting, because I feel like everybody, you know, tries to make it this, like, super deep thing of like, oh, like, I love this thing because of this. But I love that you're just like, no, like, it was just there, and it was, you know, it was easy, it was accessible, and I liked doing it. And I think that's a really good way to approach it. Like, not everything has to have this super deep meaning of like, why paper?
But it is weird that it was so natural for you just to be like, well, paper's there, and make something out of it. It's almost like the creativity comes first, and whatever you saw first was going to be made into something beautiful, you know? And you saw paper. You're like, yep, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I wonder if it would have been the same if it was like, you know, if your dad was a painter and like there was a bunch of oil paints around everywhere, or if you were just always destined to make things out of paper.
I mean, I did try a lot of materials since I was very little, but I love, like, in my MA research, because I did an MA in fine art, my research was about discarded materials and how you can find the potential in the everyday and in the ordinary, and how you can elevate that and make something out with it. And why I like paper is because I have a conversation about this with one of my art friends, because, you know, artists are really, they move into all kinds of medium, and they wouldn't stick with one unless that it really, you know, drives them into. And she will say to me, why you stick so much with it? Why? And I say to her, because it's so not recognized as an art medium. And it's funny because it is, in a way, because if you see like all watercolor and the Chinese and the Egyptians, then, I mean, they discover the whole, and then it's like a really kind of fine art medium. Mm-hmm. But when you put color in it and you start working with card, it's seen as a paper craft. And this is the fight that I have with paper. My work is not craft, even if you look at it and you think it's a craft, because a craft is something that you do, like, you know, trying to use an ordinary material or like an easy material to create something. But when you have a research, then it becomes something else. So to me, my like my obsession with paper, it's also because I want to add value to it. I want people to see how the material performs when it's used in an appropriate way, when it's not used in a simple exercise as a craft, when it can be, you know, when it can exceed expectation. And this is what I put all my effort. And also I find out when I was doing my MA also that paper is a medium for documentation. We document everything in paper. So anything you have found, it's written down, printed down. What I'm doing with it is documented in a volumetric way. So I'm documented it in a volume. So it's not just words, it's images, it's things. And this is how the relationship with it started, because I mean, when I start working with it, it's easy, it's fine, and it's accessible, and I can buy it in the UK, in Colombia, anywhere where I am, which is really important. If you move country, you need to source your materials. But then when I start my MA in fine art, the question is why that particular one?
Yeah.
Why that one? And so you need to start building up a lot and trying to see all the layers. Why paper? And then all these things will come in because I love documenting. So I'm using it to document because, you know, it's fragile. So the things that I represent really resonate with the medium because everything is really fresh because it's an alive material. Mm-hmm. You know, it came from a tree. It doesn't have like a really, you know, toxic process or anything. So everything really, you know, comes together because it's a natural medium. It comes from the tree, and these are the things that I work on, nature. So I'm trying to I haven't figured it all out yet. I'm in the process of trying to understand more, and the more I make, the more that I find. And I am so amazed with it because it's really challenging.
Yeah.
Try to make something with paper is really hard, and you need to have a lot of discipline with it and a lot of curiosity. And I really like that challenge. You know, maybe if I was working with clay, it will be a different experience. And I think the most important thing is that it's not messy at all. And I hate mess. You know, I don't like mess of any sort anywhere. So I like to come here and work, and then as clean as it is, as clean as it goes. So, you know, I don't have to wait until it dries. I don't have to wait until it cooks or nothing. It's just there, transform it, done. And I like that immediacy with paper. So
somewhere in the world right now, Michael Scott is shedding a tear in your passion for paper.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it goes on and on and on, I guess.
I love it. No, I love that. And I think something that you said just now is going to be the same answer as your answer to this question, but I'm still going to ask it because I think it frames it a little bit differently. But why did you choose to go the commercial art route instead of sticking with fine art? Because I know that that was what you were initially doing. And how did your approach change towards your work once you started working for clients, other than like the obvious stuff, of course, like having a brief and all that?
When I started doing things, I wasn't really clear of what I wanted to do, but I just did them. Uh-huh. And my brother said to me one day, you know, you have done a lot. Why don't you start posting it on the internet? And so I said, okay. So I started putting every single thing that I did. And in those days, I was using Flickr. So I started building like a community of friends about, you know, cool things and what we were doing. I don't know, that was like 10 years ago. And it was nice because I just put my ideas out and people will feedback on those. And I thought, that's great. That's really interesting. But, you know, there wasn't like a main purpose or anything. I applied to a few galleries. I showed some pieces. It was still very early years of me doing anything. And then with the time, I needed to move to the UK because I wanted to study and I needed the money. And I just sat there and wished that some money will just come, you know, from somewhere. And I got to clients. And one client was to make like a big job for an Italian oil that was launching in America. And they wanted like a calendar piece. So they wanted 12 pieces. And that was my first ever commission. And, you know, I did it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even thought about anything. They just say, well, like, what you do? Can you do this? I needed the money. And I thought like, yeah, I mean, they're going to pay me to do something. No one has paid me before. Like, I want to make it. And slowly I start understanding that I have tried the fine art route as well. And, you know, throughout the years, I have sent works to galleries and to group shows and things like that. And I just think the dynamic of being a fine artist is very different because you send things on consignment and then you have to wait until people buy what you did. Mm-hmm. And I feel it's more tricky to make something that belongs to you that people want to buy. And I feel it's a lot easier when people see that you have a skill or a set of tools that they could use and explore into something else. So for me, I mean, I will have love, and I do those. I am a fine artist in my spare time, and I am a commercial artist in my work time. And I keep both together, because if I don't do my research and my personal projects, then I'm not feeling my commercial work. So there is where all the source of knowledge it is. And then I apply that into my commercial work. And I love being a commercial artist because I like to serve people. And I like when people come and say, can you do that? And I am like, yeah, really happy to do it for you. I'm glad that you're choosing me. And I'm going to try to do my best so that your product is going to look great. You know, and it's challenging, because when you are a fine artist, you kind of move in the same field of research. You're always doing your thing. And then a client comes and they say, can you do that? And then you are like, oh, I have never done it. I have no idea. Okay, let's figure it out. So I love the challenge of being commercial, because the people that come to ask me things, they have vision. Mm-hmm. And it's a vision that I don't have. And they help me grow so much. But just being fine artist, I feel it's too narrow, and I feel it's too difficult. And obviously, at the moment, I just want to grow financially into other things. And I feel commercial is really, it's really easy for me, because I don't have to waste my time doing things that are going to sit in my studio doing nothing. Everything is for someone, and it has a purpose. And I like that. Yeah. I like that stability, I guess, to know that it's flowing and it's moving. And yeah, I mean, the more people that come, it's exciting. You know, someone came and say, can you do that? You're like, yes, that's great.
Totally. Yeah. I love that. I think that's really cool. And I think, you know, I think that it's interesting, because a lot of people would find excitement and like the freedom of the fine art, that you can create whatever you want. But I think it's, I liked what you said about how it's harder to get somebody to like want or like your vision when it's just yours, like when you're creating stuff just for yourself. Whereas, you know, working in collaboration with somebody else, I feel like you can get some really exciting stuff out of that. So I love that. I think that's a really good place, a really good take on it, because I think a lot of people, like me as well, you know, not coming from the art world, I would think that it would be the opposite, that, you know, people would find the freedom and the excitement in the fine art and then be like, oh, like I have to do commercial art. But I like that yours, you know, you have a different take on it.
Yeah,
well, I think it's good.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I just think it's good to keep a sense of both things. It's not that you are full-time commercial and that's just what you do. It's that, you know, things happen. A lot of things happen in your life. So a lot of personal things happen, a lot of experiments. And also, you know, life is very long. Like if we get to live a long life. And so I have plans for when I am old. And when I am old, I hope that I can turn into just fine art and do like my old thing. Totally. But while I'm young and I need to buy a house and supply my family, I need the commercial. So, you know, it keeps me away from working in a cafe or having an office job to just get my money. And I think I'm really lucky, because many of my friends that graduated, they didn't have the opportunity to just pick up on any creativity, and they just doing anything else in order to live. And this is the hard life of being an artist. You have to sacrifice a lot, because, you know, money is scarce. So you get money through grants, you get money through projects, you have to do a lot of traveling and a lot of, you know, residence and scholarships. And I just think that's fine, and it works perfectly for a lot of people, but I couldn't give myself to that because I have a family, and I need to be more practical in that sense. So maybe when they grow, that'll be my path.
Love that.
No, it's true. Like the family drives a lot of the decisions about what we do with our art. But you said some things that I didn't think I would care that much about when I first started this, but it does feel good when, like, because I, you know, like I wanted to be a fine artist for a lot of my life, but I really do like what you, I feel the same way about what you said about serving other people with your craft. And like it's cool when they hit you up, and it's neat to figure out the problem that they're trying to solve. And which is a lot of what I have to do is, you know, somebody's like, we need you to illustrate these things, but we want it all to flow together. And I love sitting down and figuring out like how to make that work, and then giving it back to them, and hopefully their mind's blown. Like that's the whole thing, is like, I don't really care. I care about getting the paycheck so I can pay my bills. But the thing that feels the best is when a client is like, wow, like, holy smokes, you're the greatest artist that ever lived. And they always say that to me. No.
Because
like
no, you are, you know, we are, yeah. All are, but yeah, I mean, what yeah, I no, love it's... about what you said is that challenge of, and you know, it's not about being commercial at all. It's great because they give you freedom. They just say to you, can you do this for us? But in your own way, they never say how to, they just say, you do it however you want it. And then you go crazy in there. You're like, great, I'm going to do my thing. And that is, I mean, like, who gets paid to do the things that we love? Not a lot of people, so.
Yes. Yeah. No, it is. It's rare. What we do is rare. And sometimes I have to remember that because it can become a chore. But I want to, let's move on to these questions because you've got so much to share and we want to get through this stuff. During our crash course, and if you don't know what a crash course is, our listeners, it's these, we still call them crash courses, correct, Andrea?
Yes.
Yeah. So you did one, like you just joined the roster and you did one, and it's an opportunity for the artists on the roster to get some insights and some secret tips on the skills of other artists. And you just did one and it was really cool. And we got to see your studio and like get the behind the scenes on your process. But you said something that I'll probably always remember. It's pretty easy for like any artist to copy or to steal. But you mentioned that for what you do in particular, it's dangerous because, and I kind of want you to explain that. Do you remember the answer to this question? Like the reason why I can't steal from other artists is because of the path that it leads you down as you get further into the process. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So obviously this, you know, what I'm doing is I see it as a research and I see it as me, knowing, you know, there is a lot of knowing in here of how to do something because there are a lot of elements to be considered. So when looking into all the people, I try to use their work as inspiration because you only know how to make your own things in your own way. And there is no, you know, it's not possible to try to make something like somebody else has done it because it's not your method and it's not your way of working. And when I have tried that, which I did once, it didn't work because it wasn't my way, you know. I was just trying being quick at doing something. And I realized it might serve for some other people to be quick at doing things that way. But to me, it didn't work because my work is so, I mean, it has so many stages in the process. And I just got stuck. You know, there is, I mean, I couldn't go ahead at what I was making. And then I realized, I'm the only one that knows how I make my own thing. So I just better do my own thing and stick with it. And, you know, it takes a long time. It takes longer because, in this world where things are moving so fast, people just need results so quickly. And then sometimes, especially now that I joined the agency, I feel like everyone is doing illustration and they can resolve things really quickly. And I can't even join anything because I feel like, oh gosh, it's going to take me ages to even put it out. But I don't want to change that. I think this is, you know, this is what it makes me. And I need to stick with that because otherwise I wouldn't be true to myself. And I think in this process, the most important thing is to be true to who you are. Because that was defines what you do and your work. And yeah, so it was helpful for me in that way. Is it helpful to take on trying to copy others and recreate other works? I think it is, because if we don't acknowledge what we do, if we don't acknowledge their efforts into what they are doing, and we present that our audience are going to see that we came out of the blue with this, I think it's sad that we are not more, you know, able to share and to acknowledge, because a process, I was thinking about this question early actually, and I was thinking science is really interesting because a scientist doesn't copy another, and he won't put out a theory that is not his, because if he gets caught doing that, he will really fail and be embarrassed. So what they do is that they cooperate, and the things that haven't been found, they push them, you know, and everyone is kind of cooperating like the bumblebees, you know, to make the hive and the honey and all that. And I think that's beautiful, because in that field, you realize it's up to your research and it's up to your knowledge. And this is all you are. I am my research and I am my knowledge, and this is what I'm putting out. But when you look into creative disciplines and artists, it doesn't operate like that. It operates like, I want to figure, I want to be the first, I want to be the best, I want to be out, I want people to see me now. I don't care what it takes, but I'm going to do it. And I'm never going to tell them how did I go in here. And I think that's really sad, because there is a lot of people that have put so much effort into making something, that have a beautiful research full of knowledge, that it would be great that we could all access that. And, you know, like one of the things that I loved doing when I used to go to the museums was to see artists and just be grateful because they were alive and they did that. Because yeah. I'm not going to make it like them. And why should I? That's not my job. That's not my business. I need to figure out my own things. But just to be grateful that someone was there and it did it and it was out. And I love that, you know, it happened. And so I would love for people to be more, you know, understanding and more sharing and more, you know, transparent and say, look, you know, I love this so much. I wanted to do it. But it didn't come out from me. It came out from an inspiration of this person. And this is what I came up with. This is my result. And I try to encourage that a lot in my, you know, in my pages and in my social media. Because people, they just pick on things so quickly. And then they just put them out. And then, but then when you think about, is it hurtful? Does it hurt you really? It shouldn't hurt you. Because why you should allow yourself to be hurt about what some other people are doing? It should be yeah. in your control to say, I know what I'm doing. And, you know, you can't stop people from doing anything because you give it out. You know, you birthed it, it's out there. So what you can do is just to be in control of your emotions and say, I know where I am going and I know who I am. And that's it.
Yep. Yeah, it's true. And we're pretty lucky. There's like something hanging into my eye. That's like a little more disturbing when it's swinging. Anyway, I think it was a hair that had something on the end of it. Let's talk more about that. No, I think as a commercial artist, we have a lot of fans who are just too, well, let's be honest. We're not like making controversial art. I think when you start to get a little controversial, people start to bust your chops a little bit. But you said a lot of wonderful things there, and it even made me think, like, yeah, I gotta share a little bit more. I think I might have the largest, not the largest collection, but I have some of the largest muscles. No, some of the largest vector line work pieces probably in the world because of my weird process when I do murals. And because of this rare program that I found, I've had to piece together these vectors that are like super huge. They're like, you know, one of them is like 100 feet. And how I got there was bananas. And I'm just like, nobody would be interested in this. It's boring stuff. But I should probably share like how I got there.
It is all valuable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You're right. Like when you were sharing with us, like your notes and like you showed us that pair that had like the ribs inside of it and they were smaller at the top and then expanded. And that's when I was like, wow, she's actually stumbled onto a 3D process because I know there's certain tools that do that exact thing. And so it's when they say like great minds think alike, it's true because you were duplicating a process that like 3D coders like stumbled upon years ago to make something, and you were either aware of it or you weren't, but I don't think that you were. I think you're like, well, this is how you would make it. And then you talk to somebody who's like coded this stuff, like, hey, yeah, you're right. That's exactly how you make it. Good job. Which is so cool. But anyway, Andrea has a question for you.
I do. Thank you, Dave, for passing it on.
Yeah.
I think anyone that hears you talk about your work can hear in your voice like how much you love what you do. And again, this was super apparent in the crash course and it's super apparent today. I think every conversation that I've had with you, I just like, you can feel that fire. How is turning your passion into your work gone for you? Is it all like rainbows and butterflies? Do you love it? Or I'm assuming there have been challenges along the way. Can you just share like how that has gone for you?
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I have to say I've been very lucky because everything has really opened up and moved forward to allow me to do this. And there hasn't been difficulties. Yeah, I will say small ones, but if I have to look at it overall, I'm very grateful that I get to do this for my life. That is really my passion. Is something that is the way I understand the world. Is the way I, you know, understand things. I need to have that time with myself where I make something, where I read something, where I research something. That's the way my life has always been. So the fact that I could make that childhood habit, into my adulthood, and that nothing really changed. In fact, it has opened up, and you know, every time something comes, and I'm a new opportunity, and a new this, and a new that. I'm just really grateful because this is what I love, and I've never had like a, you know, hiccup or to say like, oh, I could never do this, not because this is what I wanted. And I have always been very in tune with myself, and I know that if you want something with your heart, you can get the universe to make it real for you. And I believe that 100%. So I sit in my studio and I write, you know, wish lists, and I have like a future logbook of all the things that I want to do and that I want to be, and they start, you know, manifesting in my life. So I think that, you know, having found that place where I'm in control of who I am, it's really amazing and is the core for anything that I do in my life, you know, being a mom, doing this job, anything. So I sadly have to tell you, Andrea, no, it's all butterflies
I love
and rainbows
that. No.
And flowers.
It's that's been, always what you want to hear, but it's never the answer that you get. Like, that's always what I want people to respond with. But then they're always like, I mean, no, it does kind of suck sometimes. And like, blah, blah, blah. I'm happy to hear that it's gone well for you.
Yes, that's that is a rare answer.
I wanted to be an artist, but then I didn't know if it was going to happen in Colombia because, you know, it's a tricky one. So I decided to study design. And, you know, then later when I finished, I thought I still want to be an artist. And then I managed to do my MA in fine arts. So I just got every single thing. And there are lots of things that I want to do, but I know I have to work hard for them. So I guess, yeah, if you want something, just put it all in, all your energy, and it will happen. And then you'll be really happy.
I think that's something really special and impressive about you, honestly, is that like you just appreciate hard work so much, because I can genuinely say, I'll be the first to admit it, I'm not like that. Like a lot of the times when things get difficult, I'm like, I'm the first to be like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, this is too
hard.
You
are lazy. That's true.
Not in everything, but I do. It does happen where I'm just like, this is too hard. And like, I don't know if I want to do this. But I love that, like, you really appreciate the hard work, and you appreciate that, like, you know, nothing's going to come easy that you really, really want. So maybe I need a little more Diana in my life.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that nobody is going
to. Positivity is intense.
Yeah. I mean, no one is going to do it for you. So if you want the work, you have to do it. That's what I have learned. If I want things, I cannot sit here and wait for them to rain. I need to go and get them. And I have learned that, you know, I want something, I need to go and start, you know, doing all the logistics in order to get it, because I cannot sit here and say, oh, you know, I wish that this could have happened in my life when I never did anything about it. So I better say I really try. It never happened. It wasn't meant for me, but I clear that out. Yeah.
Well, and I also, this is like super different idea, but when you're talking this, I feel like this is also a good barometer for like not getting distracted. Because like what you're saying, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And sometimes I see artists be like get really down on themselves because they want to try something new and they just like can't get themselves to do it and they can't get themselves to start. And then they get like not upset with themselves, but kind of upset with themselves. And they're like, oh, you know, like, why can't I just like do this thing? Like I've been trying for months and I can't. And I think having that knowledge of like, okay, if you really want to do something, you should be willing to work for it. And then, you know, maybe if in your head, you know, you think of doing this thing and you're like, that just really, I don't want to do the work for that. That should be a good indication that maybe that's not for you.
Yeah. No, if you guys don't know, Andrea has a really interesting angle on artists because she is like our marketing expert. And so she'll talk, like I have a meeting with her after this podcast and she'll talk with us about like, hey, like this is how you're performing on Instagram or whatever. Like this is how your new initiative is going with if you decided to do like an email list or whatever. And so, yeah, like you really do face some of those conversations where it's like, you know what? I don't really care about doing that. Like, that's not something I'm interested in, because it is like, how much do you want to sell yourself? But I just, you know, for our listeners, if you don't know, Andrea is like a freaking wizard when it comes to marketing. I have kind of a weird question for you. And it's a question that I regret not asking past artists. And I want to start asking all of the artists that are coming up on the podcast, and sort of like speaks to a little bit of like, why do you do this? You know, like, why do you even make art? Who inspired you? Like, where did it come from? And, you know, like a really good example and a direct example to get your thoughts started is punk rock. Like they're trying to fight a system that was imposed on them, right? They reject it. It's actually why I hate punk rock. I think it's too simple. It's just like, I don't like your rules. And it's like, well, some of those rules really protect you, you dumb moron. Yeah, screw you punk rockers out there. My son's a punk rocker. I shouldn't say that. Anyway, but there's like this beauty and the sincerity in this. Like, we talk a lot about paper with Diana, right? But like, beyond the paper, like, I was looking at your work yesterday and I was like, this is beautiful stuff. It's gorgeous. And I like turned my phone to my son, who's the punk rocker. And he's like, cause he makes stuff out of paper, by the way. He made this like really cool mask the other day. And he's like, wow. He's like, that's gorgeous. And there's this sincerity and this reverence for nature in your work, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. Like, what inspires you to make the things that you make?
It's a lot. I mean, my experiences is the main thing. So I cannot make anything that doesn't belong to me. I cannot make anything that I have not lived or noticed or feel. So there is there have been waves of thoughts in which I have concentrated to do different things in my work. And so obviously some are more personal, but the one that has been like my main is nature, because we can all relate to it. We all know it. So I felt it's a really good place to put all these thoughts out. And I come from a very diverse country. And the funny thing is that when I live in Colombia, I never noticed anything because it was very crowded with the city and the people, you know?
Yeah.
And I went to Finland to live for 6 months and everything was so quiet. And I just started noticing nature. And I was like amazed because Finland is not the most exotic country. But to me, it was exotic because it opened up. And the funny thing is that in the studio that I work on, there was a magpie that they look like they have like a smoking, you know, like a tuxedo on. And he would fly. And I love his print, you know, his pattern. I was like, I mean, who made this bird is the coolest one because he looks so well dressed. And so I noticed that on him. And then he was flying in the around the studio and he will come every day. And I thought, like, what, like, why? You know, why are you here around? Like, why are you trying to say? And people were very respectful of nature in Finland. Like, everything happened in such a way that everything was so respectful. And, you know, you could really feel the tree. And obviously I was in the summer, so everything was blooming. And I have never experienced the change of season because Colombia is pretty much the same, which is amazing. But, you know, this is the problem. You are stuck in something that is the same. You cannot see different. And so yeah. I just, you know, it opened up a lot to me. I saw a swan fighting with a dog and I was like, wow, like what's going on in here? So when I got to Colombia, it really opened that chapter in my life. And I've been a very nature person since I was very little. So, you know, going to the farm with my dad and stuff like that. And I love animals so much. I guess I'm really curious about other ways of living. How, you know, how they communicate, how they do, how they interact, how they I'm just really curious person about everything. So Bristol is a really, where I live now is in Bristol in the UK. And the England is so great at nature, you know. It's, I mean, they have such a philosophy for it. They have like, you know, they have the BBC, so you have all these nature programs. And they have like seasonal programs where they involve the community to tell them like, you know, have you noticed this? And they tell you on the TV, can you please help us look after these? And if you've seen this, can you let us know where you saw them? So nature here is like the heat. Like the biggest thing is nature. And obviously, you know, like 3 years ago, I had a little boy and then he's a nature lover. My husband is a gardener and a tree surgeon. So we breathe nature. Yeah. So he brings his knowledge. We go to the forest. We find this new butterfly. Then we see, like today we saw the queen ants coming out of their nest because it's reproduction day.
Oh.
And all of them were like crazy flying. And I was like, oh, we noticed that. That's great. And yeah. Anything that we find, like not long ago, we found a caterpillar that was walking on the road, on the street. And then we wanted to keep it to see if it will turn into a butterfly because we do all those weird experiments, you know, we keep things because we love them so much. They are so beautiful and, you know, so fragile. And people don't really appreciate them. They are like, they are the most helpful things in the planet. They do all the job of the, you know, the jobs that we don't do. They are extremely beautiful and they are really complex as, you know, every single thing has a purpose. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If you really look at it, you know who is in charge of what.
Totally.
So we found this caterpillar and we wanted to keep it. And we realized that they were down the tree because they were looking to nest underground for a full year. So they will turn moths into next year. Next year they will come out like a beautiful moth. And we wouldn't have known that if we didn't research of what we noticed. So everything is about we notice things. That's what we do as a family. And the more we notice, the more knowledge we have. And the more we learn, the more we want to share, because people don't notice anything anymore. You know, we are so square into everything. We don't peek out to try to see anything else. So this is why I love nature so much, because it's just, I mean, it has so much information. It's crazy. And I'm just really curious, and I love to know things. And the more I know, the more I am grateful and happy and appreciative of everything that is out. And I feel it's so not looked after. So when I do my work, I try to tell them like, hey, you know, I did this. And then people pick up and they say like, oh, I love your bird. I noticed these birds coming into my garden. Mm. And then I say to myself, well done, because now you notice. And this is what I need to do, help you to notice.
Yeah, I know. I love that. And just so you know, we're a family that my wife calls it the beautiful beauty. And that means if we're driving or if we go somewhere and we get out of the car or we're looking at the mountains, my wife always say to my boys, notice the beautiful beauty. And they'll look out the window. This is something that just, you know, hanging out with dudes my whole life growing up and making friends, and then, you know, we able to have girlfriends, but we didn't ever try and take any like insights from them about life. It wasn't until I got married that my wife was like, made me see like really the beauty of nature, and especially animals. I was like, yeah, animals are cool. She's like, animals are cool. She loves animals. Like if she could probably stand in the middle of nature under moonlight and like all the animals would just come to her and I'd be behind a tree watching and just be like, wow, she really does have powers. And she really made me see that stuff. And I think that that's something that it's not unique to females, but it is definitely more in your wheelhouse as dudes are a little more gruff. And I'm really grateful for that. And I love hearing this experience and that, and also this thing that, this doesn't happen for everybody and you can't plan it out, but the fact that you already love nature and that you make physical objects that you see out in nature and then your husband like fixes trees, like that's like chocolate and peanut butter right there coming together in a natural way. And I love that.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, he was doing things in Lego. He was a Lego designer.
Oh, nice.
And he was being shared all over the internet at the same time as me. And he was making birds out of Lego. And I was doing birds out of paper. And then we just chat. And then we go together. And, I mean, it's great. We love nature. So it's really great. I mean, he keeps bringing a lot of cool things around. And I love just sharing that passion with him because, it's nice. It's really important for us.
That's wonderful. Love that. Great answer, by the way.
Yeah, couldn't get any better. I just feel like I love picking your brain, Diana. Like every question we ask is just such a meaningful and like thought out response, which I super appreciate. And I think this kind of has to do with this next question that I'm going to ask you, but something that you talked about during your crash course is that, you know, you're all about exploration, studying, trying new things, like figuring out what works and what doesn't. How does this help you evolve your work? And how do you continue to have fun in your work without losing sight of the goal or getting distracted? Because I think that's something that artists tend to struggle with, is like trying new things while also making sure that it all makes sense with what they're doing and doesn't distract them from the ultimate goal. So how do you keep that? Because I feel like you have that pretty figured out.
Yeah, well, I try to read a lot. I collect lots of books. I love going to see art exhibitions. So I try to keep my inspiration sources active always. And I believe the more you're out and the more you're open and the more you see, the more information you bring. So is what I was telling you. If you feed in your work from your experience, you have hundreds of experiences in a day. And if you know which ones to pick to bring into your work, then, you know, if you're conscious of your living, that's the most important thing. Then, you know, everything you live, everything has an information that you can bring into your work, and then you kind of start pushing. So, for example, I was really tired of making birds and I was looking for a new direction. And for a long time, it was just about me making birds. And then I see a lot of people start making them. And I thought, it's not taking me anywhere. So I need to really push, you know, further. Mm-hmm. How am I going to do that? create the scenery. And then I got a little bit tired of that. And this year, my son really started. I have an older son, and he's still cooking. And I'm trying to really pester him out with the diet and tell him that fruits and veg are really important, and he doesn't listen to me. So I thought, time to make fruits and veg in paper.
Love
and start,
that.
You know, just try to understand them and bring them out. And then my husband had a book about fruit, how to grow fruit, which is the only book that you can find in the UK about fruit. I don't know why no one has making more manuals about, you know, how to fruit. Yeah. And I started reading the book, and then it was really interesting because it was teaching you how to plant peaches and how peaches should be grown and which animals interact with the peaches to create the fruit. And now we're growing chilies at home. So nice. It's just really, you know, everything blends in, and there is no a place that I don't look at, that there is nothing I'm not going to find. And so, yeah, it's tricky because if you have an audience, like I was looking into my Instagram and it was telling me that the photos of birds were the most popular among the other ones. But I don't want to stick to that. I want to tell them where I am in my head, and I want them to know who I am and what's going on inside me. And, you know, you have to push hard sometimes because you have to just, you know, kind of push the wall with your hands all the time and say like, oh, just look at this. Just look at that. It's right here this way. And but I love to do that. I think, you know, if I stuck and just do what people like, it loses intention.
Totally.
And the intention is where you feel that you're finding, because you're excited of what you find, and then you can tell people like, hey, did you know that I learned this today? And did you know about that? And I like that excitement of telling people what I find. So, yeah, I guess sometimes I feel like, you know, it's not working. I need to try again. But the more, and also I am really lucky because I get to spend 6 days a week in the studio. So the more I come, the more I see what I do. And the more I see what I do, the more ideas that I have. And I think that's really important. I breed this discipline in my work. I don't choose to go drinking or do anything else that I don't enjoy. And I like to put all my time into things that actually help me to achieve something. So by coming in here, I mean, there are days I come here and I have no idea of what I'm going to do. And I just get distracted. And by getting distracted means I found something to do today.
Yeah.
And then I just, you know, move with the flow of that day, and I find something. And then I feel like, oh, when I leave the studio, I always say to myself, good one, you know, good day, good session. We found lots of things. Like I kind of congratulate myself for just coming here and creating something. And take that feeling of happiness and go home and feel like I achieved something today. That was really nice. And, you know, even if it's a little one, I just did something. It will add into, you know, the next achievements, I guess.
Yeah. No, I think that positivity is great to have towards your work because, yeah, again, it's like it's the same thing that we were talking about before where, you know, just because you have a distracted day, you shouldn't like beat yourself up about it. And as long as you're, you know, being disciplined and like continuing to try and continuing to come in and do the work, then it's all going to work towards like that evolution. So I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, man, this has been such a cool conversation. You have so much to share. It's like, I swear, like everything you say could be like a passage from a book. You'll probably write a book someday, to be honest. I don't see how you could keep yourself from it. It's paper, right?
That true?
Yeah.
Put words on it.
Compilation.
It'll be a pop-up book. I'd be like, wow, this is a really interesting book. And then you turn the page and these birds explode out. But they fire way too hard and they go into your throat. You're like, oh, I didn't know. And then you have all these lawsuits on your hand. Like, man, so killed by...
You know what's my dream project? Make an encyclopedia out of paper.
Oh, and my gosh. Oh, do you know what? Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Finish your thought. I'm going
to
show you something.
And I just want to write it in my own way as to all the things that I found while I was doing this. Because encyclopedias are so gone these days. You know, everything is just online, internet. And I want to have it, like, I want to recreate every single photo in paper, like, every single scene, and then just tell them, like, look, this is how I perceive nature in my way. And, that's my dream.
I love that. Who wants to make an encyclopedia? Holy smokes, that's so cool. Like, you know what I want to do, guys? I want to write a dictionary.
Yeah.
It's like no, that's... But it makes sense with what you do, you know, like, and I think that that's what leads people to interesting projects is they connect it to, it's natural for you to have this feeling. And then when you hear it, you're like, oh geez, I would never want to make an encyclopedia. And that's why I'm not going to, but you are, and that's why it's going to be cool.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, Diana, to wrap up, if you ever do make this encyclopedia, where can people keep up with you and keep up with your work?
So people can find me on Instagram, my name, Diana Beltran Herrera. And then I have a website as well with my name. And yeah, I think that's my most active. I'm trying to work on my Behance so they can find me in there too.
Beautiful. They'll look and hopefully they'll see a bunch of cool stuff up there. But
sorry for calling you Diana, by the way.
It's okay. I love both ways. I've learned to love that one too.
Okay,
learned. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Diana. It was so lovely having you.
Wonderful talking to you, Diana.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed talking with you guys today.
Thanks for tuning in to the Closer and Closer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review to receive the latest episodes. You don't want to miss some of the incredible conversations that we have coming up. They'll be full of powerful insight to help you reach your full creative potential. To find out more about us, visit www.closerandcloser.co.